Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. When it comes to matters of intelligence, one of my go-to guys, for sure, is the current senior vice president of the Center for Security Policy, for Policy and Programs, and the former intelligence professional at the Central Intelligence Agency and John Bolton's office at State Department, and on the House Intelligence Committee as a professional staff member. Of course, I'm talking about Fred Flights. And Fred, it's always good to have you with us, but in particular, in the aftermath of some very important writing and analyses you've been producing about this Ben Rhodes scandal, I think is the only word for it, arising from his fatuous profile in the Sunday New York Times magazine. Welcome back. Talk to us a little bit about that that profile and your takeaway from it.
Good to be here, Frank. Well, David Samuels ran an incredible piece on Ben Rhodes, a deputy national security advisor, and I had three observations on it. First of all, it confirms something that we already know, that the Obama administration repeatedly lied to the American people to sell a nuclear deal with Iran, specifically by creating this fiction that there was a new moderate government that presented a rare opportunity to negotiate and to split the regime between the hardliners and the moderates. Well, you and I know that Rouhani was put on a slate of candidates by Supreme Leader Khamenei, who led the country before he was elected in 2013 and still does. The second point is that the media was manipulated. According to this, these journalists just basically took whatever they were fed by the White House. I don't completely agree with that. I think a lot of these journalists knew very well what they were promoting was false, but they pushed it anyway. And the third point is that, and I find this really incredible, according to Samuels, he spoke to numerous officials in Washington, and he said that Ben Rhodes is the most influential foreign policymaker in the United States, except for Barack Obama, and that this man was running our foreign policy. We had secretaries of defense and state coming to meetings at the NSC, presenting their ideas to the NSC staff without being allowed to talk to the president, and that these staffers were representing the president's views apparently without speaking to him.
And without passing along to him what his cabinet officers were relaying. I know that those three secretaries of defense, Bob Gates, Leon Panetta, and Chuck Hagel, were very frustrated by this kind of operation. And, well, they should be, now that we see sort of the character of it, the mendacity of it, among other things. We're going to be talking more about this with one of the best journalists in the country, Claudia Rosette, in a moment, Fred. But I do think it's important, particularly, to drill down, given your expertise in the intelligence business and your extensive work on the Iran deal, to talk about how this kind of lying helped perpetrate national security fraud on the Congress with respect to certain of the important pieces of the so-called deal.
Well, this was national security fraud, and it continues to be. The administration created these false narratives about the moderate regime in Iran, about the concessions they made on uranium enrichment, which they said were harmless, and various other issues. They lined up experts to perpetuate these false statements, and they had a willing media that continued to push it. And I think the Iranians just must have been thrilled to see that they had allies in the United States that were prepared to back these concessions and basically back anything the Iranian government wanted.
Our guest is current senior vice president of the Center for Security Policy, for Policy and Programs, and the former intelligence professional at the Central Intelligence Agency and John Bolton's office at State Department, and on the House Intelligence Committee as a professional staff member. Of course, I'm talking about Fred Flights. You know, Fred, I don't think it got a lot of ink in this story, but there was a reference at one point to a network of think tanks and organizations like the Plowshares Fund, which I think you would agree were very active, in fact, hyperactive in promoting this false narrative and otherwise misleading the public and the Congress about the nature of the deal. And, you know, it is very troubling that you had what really translates into a grand conspiracy to perpetrate this fraud. And we're seeing day by day the whirlwind that we're reaping, including with the latest report that the Russians have now finally delivered the S-300 air defense system, which will make it vastly more difficult, even for us, let alone the Israelis or others, to take down some of the targets that will be defended by these assets, including their nuclear facilities. What do you make of this development?
Well, the S-300 is a pretty potent air defense system, and some of our advanced fighters may be able to evade it, but the system causes a great deal of worry to people in the Pentagon. The question is that if Iran's nuclear program is peaceful, if they've agreed to this deal under which they're not going to be pursuing nuclear weapons, at least for 10 years, why do they need this system? Why did Russia suddenly come through with a deal which it negotiated with Iran 10 years ago? Why did it suddenly agree to come through with this agreement? I think the answer to that is that Iran is not going to stop its pursuit of nuclear weapons, and it wants these missiles to defend its nuclear weapons infrastructure.
Speaking of its infrastructure, Fred, and I get into this a little bit later in the program with Harold Rode, but talk a little bit about this report of the Washington Free Beacon about a third underground missile site that has now been revealed. What does that say about, for one thing, the Iranians' prodigious effort to conceal their activities, but also to protect them against attack?
This is not the first report that's come out that Iran is building ballistic missiles and is hiding them in facilities to protect them from Israeli or American airstrikes. And as I've said on this program before, Iran is the only country in history to have ballistic missiles with a range of 2,000 kilometers or more without having nuclear warheads. The only country ever. And as it continues to test these missiles and make the ridiculous claim that it doesn't plan to put nuclear warheads on them, it is simply getting closer and closer to the day where it will have a very robust nuclear weapons program and the delivery system to send it against Israel and the United States.
Fred, you've spent much of your professional life at the Central Intelligence Agency and on the Hill and elsewhere worrying about proliferation. Henry Sokolsky, a colleague and friend of ours for many years, has written in the Wall Street Journal this week that he thinks that the Japanese and the South Koreans are getting ready for the option that they've long had to acquire nuclear weapons to actually be exercised. The president has now indicated he's going to head off to Hiroshima later this year to recognize the anniversary of our dropping an atomic bomb there. What do you make of that visit, first of all, and what do you think is the likelihood that the Japanese will, in fact, exercise the option for the bomb?
Well, I have many friends in Japan, some with conservative think tanks, and they have discussed this openly. They're very concerned about the threat from China, and they're very concerned about the nuclear threat from North Korea. And they know that the threat from North Korea has been significantly increasing during this administration. And they think that this erratic regime someday may decide to fire a nuclear-tipped missile that could hit Japan, maybe deliberately, maybe accidentally. And they're very concerned about that. The president's speech has to talk about how we have major challenges to go before we have a nuclear-free world. We're nowhere near that. It's actually worse today because of developments with the Iranian and North Korean nuclear programs. I don't expect the president's going to say that, but that's what an honest speech would emphasize.
I wouldn't count on that being written by Ben Rhodes, though, for sure.
That's right.
Thanks, Fred Flights. We need you writing that presidential speech, my friend. Thanks for the writing you're doing at National Review Online and elsewhere, and for the great work you do at the Center for Security Policy, as well as your past service to our country. I know you'll keep it all up and come back to us next week. Next up, we will talk with Claudia Rosette. We'll get her read on what's the status of the Fourth Estate. Is it as bad as Ben Rose says and as he has exploited? That and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back, and I'm very pleased to welcome as well Claudia Rosette, one of my all-time favorite people, particularly for her terrific investigative reporting over a lifetime of work with organizations like the Wall Street Journal, notably, Forbes.com, where she writes these days, PJ Media as well, and of course, periodically appears on this program, for which we're very grateful. She is really one of the best of the breed, a dying breed, I'm afraid, at least to hear Ben Rhodes talk about it. And Claudia, you've recently unburdened yourself on the what you call the Obama flim-flam man. I'd like to both ask you about what he shed light on in terms of how the Obama administration conducts itself and on what he said, perhaps quite accurately, about the state of your profession of journalism. Welcome back. Good to have you as always.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be here. What did Ben Rhodes show us? In what, having given somewhat baffling access to a reporter, David Samuels, who wrote a long story for the New York Times Magazine, what Ben Rhodes basically showed us was the White House sausage shop in which, sort of contrary to the way it usually works, it's not just a matter of spin. It's a matter of manufacturing, quote, narratives where really nothing gets in the way. Just he gloated about manipulating the press. His colleagues supported that picture and explained it further. And the particular case study offered was how they had basically lied to sell the Iran deal. And at this stage, we're bragging it up. You know, it's a done deal. This was, as Lee Smith very nicely described it, a victory dance in the end zone. And at the same time, it was the most insulting. The picture that emerged was one of Ben Rhodes, the president's right-hand man, mind-melded with the president, as he was described, on both making and selling foreign policy, with incredible contempt for the press, for Congress, for the public, everyone, in fact.
Our guest is Claudia Rosette, a longtime reporter for and editorial writer at the Wall Street Journal, now a columnist with Forbes.com and PJMedia.com. Check out her Rosette report at PJ Media especially. Let me ask you, Claudia, Ben Rhodes talked about 27-year-old know-nothings being what populates the press these days, and how basically just by putting out the official meme from his social networking platforms, they all just sort of began retweeting it, in a manner of speaking, thoughtlessly and ignorantly. Does that sound about right to you?
Well, Frank, it does, and yet there's more to it. First, broadly speaking, yeah, and I think the profession of journalism has been going through quite a shakeout for some time, technology-driven, which may continue, and we may once again get better journalism is the norm. There are still some terrific reporters out there. There are a lot who are, 27 years old and don't know much. But I actually think the bigger problem here, it's not basically about the press. Well, that's what Ben Rhodes was speaking of with such contempt. I think the bigger problem is that even when the press does finger lies coming from the administration or something like this unseemly, disgusting gloating by Ben Rhodes' assistant, mind-melded to President Obama, we have an administration that effectively behaves as if it has no conscience, that doesn't do anything. What we've seen over and over again is even when things are exposed, and here I speak of things ranging from Obamacare to the, yes, they were lies that went into the selling of the Iran deal, that Congress would have complete access to every part of the deal, that Iran would no longer be able to work on missiles, et cetera, that you have an administration that doesn't actually do anything. In fact, this is an administration where President Obama has been caught violating the Constitution. Nothing happens. Remember the hideous rollout of the horrible Obamacare, which was desperately unpopular, received not a single vote from the Republican side. And then when the botched website came out, under previous administrations, somebody would have been fired, heads would have rolled. In this case, heads don't roll. When Eric Holder was held in contempt by Congress, called the American people cowards, etc., nothing happened. He stayed. And again, To me, the big question here is why hasn't Ben Rhodes resigned or basically been fired following that article, which was so contemptuous? Remember, these people hold positions of public trust paid by our tax dollars. And here's somebody deriding the way the people whose trust he holds and gloating over how he was able to abuse that trust. And yet he's still there. In fact, the White House has played this down with a complete shrug. Ben Rhodes wrote a piece talking about how we advocated for the Iran deal, in which, once again, he sort of respun the narrative. He's now doing the narrative of how the narrative is really fine. And when the president's spokesman, Joshua Earnest, was asked about that earlier this week, he said, well, I haven't spoken to the president about that, so I guess the president didn't ask him to write this piece. Well, we're really to believe that nobody discussed with the president this article about how a man mind-melded with the president, whose job basically is to package the, quote, narrative of the president's incredibly very bad policy agenda, has not actually discussed this with him. The president's just sort of removed himself. It's business as usual at the White House, to the extent that apparently they tried to, the White House spokesman and chief of staff dropped by the press corps with a bag, with a box of donuts yesterday. Here, guys, it's okay. And said, look, Ben Rhodes would say it differently if he could. Well, that's actually not the point. The point is he did what he did, and we know, thanks to this piece, and yet he's still there. So, Frank, it's a problem that the press greatly goes along with this, but they don't all. And the administration actually was called out by some reporters on its lies. Nothing happened. That's the problem.
Yeah, and nobody else is holding them accountable, I think is your point. You'd think the press would, at the very least, be up in arms about this, or the Congress, which was obviously the principal victim of this chicanery and you know,
Frank,
outright
lying. I think that's correct, but I also think we've had an administration where people who try to hold them to account do not do well. And there I'll refer you back to, say, the IRS scandal with the Tea Party, where, once again, Lois Lerner said, I'm not going to say anything, and the president told the country there's not even a smidgen of corruption here. And then it sort of just it went away. It becomes so complicated that it's lost. And here you can blame the press. It's lost in the next week's news cycle.
The same you might say is at work with the Hillary Clinton email scandal as well.
Correct. Or Benghazi, where Ben Rhodes also drafted video talking points to prep Susan Rice for her talk shows, in which they blamed it on a video. It becomes so muddied and drawn out. And basically with pen, phone, and sheer indifference, the president violates sort of basic understandings that have been vital to the workings of this democracy.
To say nothing of the Constitution, which spells out those workings.
Right, exactly, of a written document. And when that happens, people, it's what you actually see happen to democratic dissidents who have been exiled from dictatorships. They turn on each other. They discover they can't really do very much. They have no real say. Well, we haven't gone that far. But we are very much in a system where it's so hard to in any way hold this administration to account, because President Obama basically says, I don't care, I'm going golfing.
Bloody, unfortunately, we are out of time at the moment, but this is such an important topic. And I think your vantage point as one of the best journalists of our time gives you a certain authority and certainly clarity as to what's going on here. And I hope that your voice will be heard by your peers and counterparts in the press, as well as the rest of us. It's such an important message. Thanks for taking the time, Claudia, and for the work you do at PJ Media. And come back to us soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Harold Rode. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs, like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260. The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The definition of racism is imputing shared qualities to a given population simply because they have a skin color in common. Yesterday in Florida, Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice declared that people who are alike, namely white people, often think alike. She went on effectively to suggest that Caucasians should therefore be denied employment opportunities in the national security community so that America is fully reflected in its ranks. That's racism. Worse yet, the White House press secretary indicated that the president agrees. So add racist assaults on the common defense to such other Obama initiatives as debilitating defense budget cuts, religious persecution against Christians in uniform, a lack of training and new weaponry, crippling environmental restrictions, and the sexual and social reengineering of the armed forces. The cumulative effect is to leave them hollowed out and inviting enemy aggression. Some legacy. This is Frank Gaffney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're joined by Dr. Harold Rode, for many years one of our government's preeminent authorities on Middle East matters, particularly involving Iran and Turkey, two nations we want to talk with him about today. Harold was one of those in the Pentagon back in the day when I was there and for all of the intervening period just about, who was really the go-to guy on what we should be doing, the nature of the challenges we were facing in the Middle East, and the extent to which they posed real problems for our country. Harold Rode is these days a senior fellow with a terrific organization, the Gatestone Institute, where you can find his writings, among other places. Harold Rode, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Nice to be here, Frank.
I'd like to start with Iran, Harold, because you've been following it so closely. You've been chronicling this disastrous deal with the Iranians. I wonder what you make of the spectacle, is the only way I can think for it, of John Kerry simultaneously inveighing against corruption, I believe in London at the moment, and trying to get British banks into doing business with the Iranians, which seems to me to be a surefire way of augmenting corruption, don't you think?
Absolutely. 100. I agree with you 100%. Look, the more that Obama and Kerry kowtow, give in to Iranian demands, and they keep making more and more because they sense weakness, and when they sense weakness, they push harder. We are seeing all over the place Iranians who are understood as the victors are making headroads. They're making headroads now into Africa. They're making headroads into South America in ways we've never seen. Conversion to Shiism, their type of Iranian government-controlled Shiism. This is long-term, very detrimental to the interests of the United States. But and then we can come up with all the reasons we think that Obama and Kerry are doing these things. I just don't get it.
The Washington Free Beacon today has a story by Bill Gertz about a third underground missile site having been revealed in Iran. These are missiles that are presumably going to be, you know, over time, longer and longer range, more and more of a threat to us, and equipped with nuclear weapons. Is it safe to assume, Harold, that with this infusion of cash, thanks to Obama and Kerry, that the Iranians are almost certainly building a lot of underground places that will hide their nuclear weapons program and God knows what all else?
Oh, I have a little doubt of that. If I'm correct, Iran is about the size of Texas. It's almost impossible to find underground sites. And again, we're giving in, and we will pay big time in the future.
Harold, let me turn to another topic. As I mentioned, you are also deeply knowledgeable about Turkey. And we recently had the Organization of Islamic Cooperation Summit hosted by President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey. Give us a flavor of what the Erdogan regime is up to at the moment and where you think it is likely to go, given the present trajectory.
Again, if you add into that what you just said, America weakness, Erdogan wants to be first Sultan of Turkey, absolute powers. He is Islamifying Europe by in whatever way he makes an agreement with the Europeans. Whether he lets Muslim immigrants go to Europe, those from Turkey, Iraq, or whether Iraq, Syria, or Afghanistan, or whether the Europeans give in and give him free visas to let 75 million Turks come and settle there. They're quiet until they have a critical mass, and then they'll want Sharia law. They were stopped in 1683, the Turks, and now they're taking over that. When it comes to other places, Erdogan has the troops he sees. It could be the Muslim army, or at least the bases of a Muslim army, to continue to fight on, to make the entire world Muslim, to live under one state, under a caliph, under Islamic law.
Now, let me ask you, Harold Rode, are you inferring this from what he's saying? Are you imputing it to him on the basis of the overall character of his record and his AKP party, or is this actually what he is saying quite explicitly is his objective?
It's, Frank, it's a combination of both. I have studied Islamic fundamentalism for about 53 years, and he's a very easy figure to understand when you understand him in the context of the goals of Islam, as explained in the biography of the Prophet Muhammad, their prophet. It's all there, and all he is doing is following that. Now, these things exist in English if we really want to read who his guides are. And he says that he invokes their names. I'll give you an odd, funny story, and how I want to say, let's be polite and call us naive. He was asked not long ago by some people what the Jews of Turkey think about him, to which he responded, they love me just like the Jews love Muhammad. Now, the questioner had no idea about Islamic history, what happened with the Jews and Muhammad, and he left it there, and now, therefore, it appeared that Erdogan won. Now, what is the real story? It is that when Muhammad went to Medina, he at first tried to get the Jews there to become Muslims and that they should look at him as a prophet and convert to Islam. When they didn't, he turned against them. As his people were slaughtering the head, there were three Jewish tribes, as they were slaughtering the head of the Jewish, there's cutting off the head of the largest Jewish tribe, the wife of that Jewish tribal leader, Muhammad, let's say politely, was having sexual relations with. in front of this while this was all going on. This is part of early Islamic tradition. Erdogan would say that Safiya, that woman, loved Muhammad. This is garbage.
Harold, let me ask you quickly a couple of things. You touched on a very worrying development, and that is that the European Union has agreed to allow visa-free travel for Turks. You've suggested that large numbers of them will migrate to Europe and settle there, continuing the hijra, as it's been called, the migration, the colonization of Europe. Is there reason to believe that that is in fact what will happen here, not just a possibility, but in the objective and purpose of Erdogan?
Well, two things. I'm not sure if the agreement on the visa-free that the Europeans have given in to Erdogan's demand for visa-free travel. That may be a sticking point. But either way, even if they don't, then he'll let the Muslim immigrants from other places transit Turkey and go to Europe. Either way, the place becomes filled with more and more Muslims that don't recognize European culture and civilization, don't want to assimilate, and they want to bring their version of Islam to rule in Europe. Now, it's really simple how it works. They at first establish small communities among themselves, and they don't bother anybody. But with time, once they got a critical mass, then they demand Sharia, they demand all sorts of things, and the Europeans are no longer believe in themselves, their civilization, their culture, and they constantly give in, hoping that somehow they will be able to stem this tide.
Let me ask you, lastly, Harold, the resignation recently of Ahmet Davutoglu, the prime minister of Turkey, what are the implications of that in terms of Erdogan's consolidation of power?
The truth is, nobody knows really. Nobody's talking about why it happened. Davutoglu, the former prime minister, was a stooge of Erdogan. And from what little I understand, he began to be more vocal to Erdogan. Erdogan does not tolerate people with differences of opinion. That's Erdogan's democracy. I decide, you do what I say.
My way or the highway, in other words. And Harold Rode, the highway that you've just described is leading in a very dangerous direction, I think, for Europe and for us, inevitably, down the road as this Islamization program progresses. We appreciate so much your counsel and the superb work you do at the Gatestone Institute, where you are, of course, a distinguished senior fellow. And, of course, I will appreciate your service to our country and the Defense Department and elsewhere. Harold, keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we will be speaking with Mark Krikorian about immigration challenges and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. in an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about civilization jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization. The Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Every year, more American adults die from vaccine-preventable diseases than from breast cancer, traffic accidents, or AIDS. Vaccines like the one for pneumococcal disease can protect adults from illnesses that can cause missed days of work, hospitalization, and even death. Pneumococcal disease is an infection that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, or even a severe blood infection. That's just one example of an infection that can spread from person to person. Getting vaccinated can help protect you and those close to you. I'm Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. When I speak with my patients, I urge them to get all their recommended vaccines. Now I'm urging you to speak with your doctor to find out which vaccines you need. For more information about the vaccines that are recommended for adults and the diseases they prevent, like HPV, whooping cough, tetanus, and shingles, visit adultvaccination.org. That's www.adultvaccination.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined once again by one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving immigration. He is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, a simply indispensable organization in Washington, D.C. these days. Mark Krikorian is his name. He is a very vigorous contributor to the public policy debate, not only through the work of his organization, but by his various written products, including How Obama is Transforming America Through Immigration. And you can find his writings also with great regularity at National Review Online and elsewhere. Mark Krikorian, welcome back. It's good to have you as always.
Thanks for having me.
Well, as we're speaking, Mark, there's a series of conversations taking place on Capitol Hill between Donald Trump and various members of the Republican leadership, some would say establishment, notably Paul Ryan and others in the leadership in both the House and the Senate. What, if you were a fly on the wall, would you expect is being said within those circles about Trump's positions on immigration in particular, which have really resonated clearly with the Republican base? Specifically, I'm thinking of building a wall, ending the illegal immigration from south of our border, and also at least having a temporary suspension of immigration from Muslim nations.
Well, I mean, they're going to be talking about a lot of subjects, you know, Medicare cuts and stuff like that that they disagree on. But immigration is going to be one of those items because for, you know, for Ryan, open immigration is part of what he absorbed from Jack Kemp, who was his political idol, as a basic American norm. In other words, that sure, we can't let everybody in, but, and what's after the but is the important part, which is that, you know, only people for whom there are real problems, terrorists and what have you, are the people we should keep out. Everyone else, in effect, has a right to move here. I mean, that's the worldview of Paul Ryan, if not actual legislative specifics he's put his name on. Now, Trump's own positions are sometimes incoherent and contradictory and all the rest of it. I mean, I'm not a big fan overall, but clearly he has a more his perspective on immigration is much more in line with that of the general public, that there need to be controls and limits, and not just limits on criminals and terrorists, which in a sense that's sort of an easy thing, but actual numerical limits, actual limits on, say, less skilled immigrants or immigrants who are just coming here because they have relatives. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, Ryan won't sort of in public immediately say absolutely not, under no question, but he's not comfortable with that stuff. His goal, his ideal immigration policy would be one where employers get to bring in anybody they want as long as they're not criminals, which is to say unlimited immigration.
I was recently talking with a senior member of the congressional staff about this so-called criminal justice reform initiative that Paul Ryan, among others on both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill these days, are supporting, as is, of course, President Obama. I was struck by what I was told about the percentage of aliens that make up this population that might be sprung by the tens of thousands as a result of the sentencing guideline reforms and shortened sentences and so on. What do you make of
that? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that a disproportionate number of the people who would be let out of federal prison by these guidelines, which may or may not be a good idea. I mean, I'm agnostic on it. I don't know enough about it to say. But the fact is that a very large share, much larger than the share of the overall population, will be non-citizens. Because immigrants make up a disproportionate share of the federal prison population. Not so much at state prisons, which is where most prisoners are, but in the federal prisons, they are disproportionately non-citizens and disproportionately illegal immigrants. Now, the key thing is, okay, if you want to change sentencing rules, you know, maybe, maybe not. Let's just for the sake of argument say it's a good idea. I've heard estimates of maybe as much as a third or more of them will be illegal immigrants, deportable aliens. Well, the question is, will they be deported? And it's almost certain that they won't, because if they're being let go, it's because, well, these are crimes that are minor enough, so-called, that they will be released. Well, that means the administration also considers them too minor to lead to deportation. So this would result in releasing tens of thousands of non-citizen criminals back onto the streets of the United States.
Now, Mark, again, you follow very closely at the Center for Immigration Studies the nature of these immigrants, and I'm sure you're aware that the preponderance, as I understand it, of those now in federal prison that would be subject to this kind of leniency are drug traffickers from south of the border, and or gang members. And just, you might be agnostic on the bill itself, but just from the point of view of public safety, Mark, is it likely that people who have these qualities, if released from federal prison and turned loose on the streets of the American cities, are likely to revert to form and perhaps be a real danger to the American people?
There's no question that a large share, almost certainly a majority, probably almost all, will end up recidivist. In other words, committing new crimes that then they'll have to go all through the process of prosecuting them, assuming they're ever found, and putting them back in jail. And that, of course, doesn't consider the people who end up dying or losing their property or being injured or what have you because of all of the crimes that these people will commit. So there's no question that this is a serious public safety threat. I mean, this is, you know, potentially a kind of mass jailbreak.
Hey, Mark, let me ask you about one other thing. In the news today are reports that immigrant advocacy groups are making a very concerted effort, among them, by the way, Muslim advocacy groups, to register their clients, if you will, and get them to vote in the upcoming general election, presumably against Donald Trump, who has, as we've been talking about, staked out a position rather hostile to illegal immigration particularly. Do you have any feeling, Mark Corian, as to what percentage of these immigrants may, in fact, not be entitled to the vote? Should we be concerned about electoral fraud here?
Yeah, we definitely have to be concerned about it, because the groups that are seeking to register these people, you know, for them, it's a kind of by any means necessary viewpoint with regard to stopping Donald Trump. So, and in fact, it doesn't even take Donald Trump to result in that kind of fraud, because when Clinton was up for re-election, the previous Clinton in 1996, the vice president's office actually ran a major effort called Citizenship USA to sign up, to naturalize and to register to vote as many people as possible before the election. And there were tens of thousands of them who were not subject to proper procedures and proper security checks. Some significant number of them, would not have passed and should not have been registered. So even without the kind of frantic views that a lot of these anti-borders groups have now, you would end up with some real problems of fraud. But with the Democrat administration, a Justice Department that frankly couldn't care less about the law, and the specter of Trump before these advocacy groups, I have no doubt that they're going to be at the very least looking to cut corners and the administration to rush through applications faster than they properly should be.
Very worrying stuff. As always, Mark Krikorian, you are a fantastic resource. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work you and your team do at the Center for Immigration Studies, and for your visits with us from time to time. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will do so again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.